Now, to continue in the food theme, it's a great pleasure to welcome back to the show food stylist, writer and photographer Diane Bibby. You may recall we last chatted to her back in 2020 when she launched her debut cookbook called Bibby's Kitchen. And this follow-up, second book, is called Bibby's More Good Food. You know what, to introduce it, I will quote from Michelin star chef Jan-Hendrik van der Westhuizen, who wrote the foreword to this book. He describes it as a celebration of Diane's love of bringing people together around a table. And it shows. It is a book crammed full of really not just tasty and unusual recipes, but practical and accessible recipes. It's a nice mix, I think, of recipes that you read and think, yes, I can try that and I want to try and make that dish this weekend. Or recipes that you'll go, that's going to be fun to really try for a special occasion dinner party. It's got a nice mix of both, as well as some really good advice on sort of pantry staples and basics that are worth holding on to in your larder. Delighted to have Diane Bibby back with us on the show after a couple of years break. Diane, welcome back and congratulations on this beautiful new book.
Hi, Pippa. It's so lovely to be back chatting with you again.
Thank you. What was the inspiration for this book? Apart from the fact that you obviously continue to love making good food, making it look beautiful and taste beautiful and sharing it with people, what was the sort of the thought process that led to the new cookbook?
Pippa, I think when you are involved in anything creative and especially food, it's really inexhaustible, and one recipe or one dish or something that you learn now almost grows and it becomes something else. So there's this ever-changing energy behind food, and I don't think you'll ever quite be done. Mm-hmm. Although writing a book is not for the faint-hearted, and I thought I'd really, my one was my one. But you know, it just leads to so many other possibilities, and you start thinking creatively and you think, oh, I could have done this, I should have done that. But there's just so much more to say and do about food that I don't think you'll ever reach a point where it's enough, if you know what I'm saying. So it's almost like a bit of a sequel, and I wanted to experiment and also to push myself a little bit further, and so that growth continues, and that's really what led to the second book.
What's noticeably different in the second book is something that we've seen creeping into foodies and chefs' panels everywhere, Diane, more plant-forward, by which I don't mean that it's by any means a vegetarian or vegan book. It's not. But there is a lot more emphasis on vegetarian dishes and on making them beautiful and sort of worthy in their own right, if I could put it that way, that it's no longer an afterthought that you've got to have one or two vegetarian recipes or dishes on a menu, for example. It's clearly something that you have had a lot of fun playing with.
Oh, Pippa, I love vegetables of any sort, vegetables and fruit, any fresh produce, and I think they have such limitless possibilities and potential, and I think we haven't exhausted them really. But to make them more mainstream and to make them loved by meat eaters as well, and everybody is more mindful of trying to, and I emphasize trying, because it's not always possible and it's not always maybe necessary to have just plants. But everyone is more aware of trying to eat more healthily, and the best way that you can do that is to include more whole foods and plant foods in your diet. So while I'm not a strict vegetarian, I prefer vegetarian food, and it really is, it's an honest reflection of how we eat as a family, and how I see a lot of people eating, even in all the cooking classes that I do, people are keen to eat lighter and healthier. So they might not categorize themselves and say, I'm strictly this or that, but there's definitely a move worldwide for everybody to eat more plants. And so you don't have to be a vegetarian or a vegan. It's really a modern representation of how people are trying to eat these days.
Yeah. Having said that, just to reassure listeners, there are beautiful recipes for salmon. And I mean, I'm looking at the fennel chicken meatballs with butter bean mash, which on a night like this, it's a cold and wet day in Cape Town. The thought of that beautiful hearty mash underneath and these beautifully spiced chicken meatballs, it looks absolutely divine with a lovely salsa to cut through it all on the side. Having said that, Diane, I nearly didn't get past page 22 of this book because I turned the page and saw specularis nut butter. And every sort of cell in my body nodded in recognition and took me back to a visit to Amsterdam a couple of years ago where... in between frites with mayonnaise, the only thing I ate was jar after jar of speculaas and packet after packet of stroopwafel and speculaas cookies. I mean, for those who haven't explored it, firstly, do yourself a favour and find somebody who can make it for you or tell you where to buy it. But Diane, I looked at it and I thought, well, this recipe actually looks like a healthy version of speculaas. It's based on a mix of raw nuts and then the wonderful spices of the Dutch cookie flavoring, the cinnamon, the mixed spice, the nutmeg. But how do you keep it healthy-ish when you're making something as naughty as speculaas? What's your trick?
You know what? There's always a little bit of a contradiction between the naughty and the nice. But most of it, like the book itself, it's 80% really good, very wholesome, with the health in mind. And like I always say to my daughter, just because I'm selling this as healthy, let's say fudge brownies, they are not kilojoule free, but the nutritional value that it has is so beneficial. So it's not like you're eating empty calories, and one's appetite is so satisfied when you're eating something that is nutritionally good and sound, and it feeds your body. So something like the speculaas nut butter, it's got all the flavorings of those gorgeous little strip waffles that we love so much, and they're so addictive. But there's nothing really valuable about their nutrition. But whereas this, it's all healthy fats. So I'm not going to say that you should eat the whole jar at once, but if you're eating it, it's possible. But when you're eating, at least you know you're getting things that are as close to nature as possible. They're not processed. Yeah. And that's the wonderful thing about making food from scratch, is that you can take it in that raw form and you can also adapt it and change it. You can make it vegan if you don't want to use honey. Yeah. So instead of white sugars, you can use a nutritional sugar. It's still a sweetener, but it has more value to it. So it's just making clever little swaps, and it makes it healthier, and there's a feel-good factor to that straight away for me.
And you can see that even into your dessert chapter, Diane, that something like the lime curd tart with mascarpone, okay, no one's going to pretend that it's not a sweet ending to the meal that's got its fair share of things like tennis biscuits and icing sugar in the base, but you've lightened it a little bit. It's just a little bit to use. Mascarpone, I suppose, is also rich in its own right, but it's not add a tin of condensed milk and throw in an extra bag of caster sugar on top. Exactly. You've obviously been mindful in creating these recipes of where are the places we can substitute healthfully and mindfully without substituting on flavour. The other recipe which just leapt off the page, desperate to be eaten for me, was your green fattoush with za'atar and mint vinaigrette. And this is perhaps, I was looking at this over the weekend when the sun was still shining, but this beautiful crunchy looking salad, for me that's what caught my eye, because I could almost imagine sinking my teeth into a forkful of all these beautiful bits of crunchy cucumber and quinoa and bulgur wheat and then baby marrows and spinach and rocket and all the herbs and beautiful things you've woven in there. Fattoush, perhaps not as well known to South Africans as it might be. I know you are very fond of Middle Eastern flavours and dishes. That shines through in this book. Won't you just tell us a little bit more about fattoush for the sake of those who've never had the privilege of having it before?
Oh, they definitely have to make it then. You know, fattoush in itself is a lot simpler than possibly my recipe. And that's really what I love about food, is that you can take something that's a cultural favorite or that has a lot of history. And for the most part, those things are a lot simpler than when we start playing with it and maybe westernize it, if you can call it that. But that really, for me, is where the creativity in food comes in, and a dish becomes something completely different. And it's still with true respect to the original, but just in a playful way. And I think you can add so much more bulking it out into a main meal. So for me, a salad, I never really consider it to be a side. I love a salad as a whole meal. And for those people that are always left with the dregs of what's ever left after a butter lettuce salad, which is very little, is to rather add in things that have so many textural contrasts and nutritional values, again, different flavors. And that entire fattoush, which really should be more really about cucumber and the freshness maybe of some tomato and the toasted pita bread. So that's really important, that crunch thing. And for me, I just added a couple of extra things in which make it really main meal. And it's so interesting. And it's got the sweet, salty textures and flavors. So there's cranberries and there's some, I think there's some feta in as well. But you can add some of the chicken kebabs, which are also there, the horrific chicken kebabs, yeah, and add that on. So the whole idea behind it, Pippa, was that people could use it from jumping from chapter to chapter and add this into maybe or a side on rice or people, you know, that want salad with it. And it becomes more usable and adaptable, and it shouldn't just be classified as, oh, but this is just the salad. There's so many things that it can do. And it's just, I think it's got a better dressing. It's also really spiky and green and fresh and a little bit tangy. So there's a lot of playfulness and big, bold flavors. It just keeps it interesting.
Playfulness and big, bold flavors, a good way to describe the book itself. Diane Bibby, so lovely to have you on the show again today. And congratulations on Bibby's More Good Food. Now, for those who are listening with their mouths watering, you can find the book in stores. It has just hit the shelves, published by Penguin Random House and retailing at about 480 Rand a copy in a beautiful, beautifully photographed hardcover. I've got to say, Diane's background in food styling and photography really shows in the way this book has been created and photographed, as much as it does in the creation of the recipes that are smart and in some cases a little bit challenging, but they just look like they are loaded with flavour and with texture. I can't wait to get cooking from Bibby's More Good Food. Thank you again to Diane Bibby.